Good afternoon, everybody. I'm glad that you could all join us for integrating the publishing process from end to end. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'll be moderating your webinar today. One of the key issues associated with emerging digital technologies is how it transforms traditional relationships during the process of moving a product from its source to its final customer. And I don't think there's any industry that's experienced a greater transformation than the book publishing market. What you're seeing is there's 48.3 million iPads, Android tablets, and e-readers that were sold to U.S. consumers in 2011, and about half that amount were sold the previous year. And so what's happened is this is forcing book publishers to adapt quickly and consider distributing content through traditional as well as electronic channels. Today we're going to be spending some time talking about that transformation. What we'll be doing is we'll be joined by Peter Berkery, and he's the Executive Director for the Association of University Presses, and Reagan Parker, and she's the Business Development Director at Thompson Shore. Now, when we take a look at today's session, what I wanted to do is make sure that we give you a few tips to ensure that you enjoy the session. First of all, if you're having any technical difficulties, all you need to do is let us know by using the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking the help widget below. We'll be taking your questions throughout the webinar today. And so if you have a question for any of our speakers, submit it via the Q&A box, and we'll answer those in the order with which they come in. Please make sure that you disable pop-up blockers. And if you want to see what this console can do, all you need to do is click on the Tips for Attendees widget, and you'll get a complete rundown. Now, with that as a backdrop, I'm going to open up the session today and talk about some of the critical trends that we're seeing that cut across all segments of the book market. Then Peter Berkery is going to focus specifically on what's taking place in the university press market and what publishers in the university press space need. And then Reagan will share with you the solutions available and how Thompson Shore is effectively supporting cross-channel delivery and integrating interactive content, as well as the benefits to publishers for leveraging these latest technologies. And then we'll wrap up by addressing any critical trends we might have missed during the webinar, and we'll do that at the back end. But we'll address again as many as we can as we go through the webinar. Now, I'm going to start by talking about some of the things that we're seeing take place in the book market. And I think the big message for everybody is that technology has changed how content is being created, formatted, designed, stored, printed, digitized, distributed, and sold. And as a result, new content products are being created, new channels are emerging, and revenues are shifting among formats. And what's happened is these changes have touched virtually all participants in the publishing industry. It's the author, the publisher, the publishing service provider, printers, manufacturers, wholesalers, retailers, e-tailers, and the end consumer. And I think this slide pretty much sums up the challenge in terms of what publishers are dealing with. The real question is, how do I handle that end-to-end production so that consumer can have it their way? And so what we're seeing in this market is an evolving definition of the book. It used to be a physical static document that was manufactured in large quantities. There were professional authors and editors. They had a color cover. They were monochrome internally. They were done first in hardcover and then in softcover. And there was brick-and-mortar distribution. Well, today, that's all changed. Books are printed, but they're also electronic. They're being produced on demand. I can connect with the book. The book can be interactive. I can actually customize a book for a run length of one. I can integrate it so that there's sound and motion as part of the book. I may want it right away. I can blend it with personal content. And, oh, by the way, I can have multiple delivery methods. And so what we're seeing is technology helping people move across different types of distribution and run lengths in the book market. And so typically what you've got is when I start out with a brand new book, it may be a relatively long run length. I may do then very short run lengths if it's a specialty book or if I'm doing some self-publishing. And then, oh, by the way, I have the ability in a lot of instances to produce that book on demand, and then I can also make that book interactive. And what you're seeing is that run lengths within that book market are declining. You're also seeing a requirement for custom books, self-published books, photo books, and then we're seeing people use tools and techniques ranging from books that contain quick response codes to augmented reality that make those books, in fact, interactive. Now, BookStats recently published their book stats from 2012. And they obviously track the book market on a regular basis. And the simple message is that the U.S. publishing industry, in terms of revenue, dropped from $27.9 billion in net revenue in 2010 to $27.2 in 2011. That was a decline of about 2.5%. The news, however, is that unit sales, in fact, actually rose. And they increased to $2.77 billion. And what you saw was, obviously, the discrepancy is due to higher sales of lower-priced e-books. When you break it apart by segment, what you're seeing is, obviously, the majority of the revenue comes from trade, followed by K-12, higher ed, professional, and scholarly. And, of course, there's self-publishing. And we're seeing self-publishing, obviously, take off. And, in fact, when you look at 2011, there were more than 148,000 print books that were self-published. That's 43%, believe it or not, of all the print books published in the U.S. And what you saw was the leaders that were helping people were organizations like Amazon's Create Space, Author Solutions, and then there were small presses or publishers who produced 10 or fewer books and generated a fair number of the self-published titles in 2011. I think when you look at this concept of self-publishing, what you're seeing is that when you look at books like 50 Shades of Grey that started out in that realm and became bestsellers, the world of self-publishing is, in fact, a reality. And so the simple message is that e-books are driving the trade book segment. E-books are up 117% for adult fiction, but still represent, by the way, only 30% of sales, which says that print is still very important in that space. The K-12 segment declined some, by the way, largely driven by the economy and state budgets. Higher ed was up, and when you look at the job market, it all makes sense. And the logic behind that is more people either went back to school or stayed in school. Brick and mortar remained the number one sales distribution channel as it was in 2010. But what you're seeing is that the direct-to-consumer sales are up dramatically and topped $1 billion for the first time. Now, when we look at the book market, InfoTrends did an emerging market study with a North American publishing company. And what we did is we looked at how books are being produced. And we actually went out and we surveyed 145 book publishers. And basically what they said is that print still remains the primary source of revenue, and it represents about three-quarters of the revenue. Electronic books, 17, audio, 1, and other made up the balance. So print is still an important component, though electronic book distribution is heading up rapidly. The other big message was that what we're seeing is a migration from traditional production technologies to digital technologies. And when we asked those same publishers how they'd be producing books, and they looked today, basically what we saw was that 57% were done with traditional print techniques, while 43% were done with on-demand techniques. The projections are that that'll change 3 years from now, where it'll be a 60-40 ratio, 60% being done in an on-demand environment and 40% being produced using traditional technologies. Now, one of the big things that we're seeing is, obviously, when we look at digital print books and we look across all applications, and InfoTrends does an application forecast on a regular basis, but books represent basically the highest growth market for movement from traditional technologies to digital. And in fact, projections are that by the time we hit 2016, books will represent almost 52 billion pages in digital print. And that's a 14% compound annual growth rate. So clearly a huge market opportunity. The other piece that we asked folks was, how do they decide and what's their approach to producing new book titles? And when we surveyed publishers, what they said to us was, in half the instances, decision for output format is made per publication. And so what that means is that you're seeing that as they look at the publication, they'll decide whether it's going to be print or electronic or both. Now, what's interesting is that in 30% of the instances, what those publishers are doing is they're producing an ebook in every print edition, for every print edition that they do in 30% of the instances. 9% said new titles are print only, and 4% said that they were ebook only. Now, we also noted that of the 145 publishers that we surveyed, only 13 of them indicated that they were not offering ebooks. When you look at that as a percentage, there are very few publishers that are not offering ebooks with the print edition. The thing that they basically told us was that more than half of those will also be offering ebooks within the next 2 years. Now, the other component that we looked at was backlisting. And basically, even the book publishers that are not currently producing ebooks understand that the digital future is the reality, with 85% planning to offer them within the next 3 years. But the other component that we looked at was the backlist side of it. And what you looked at was the backlist titles are all being made available on a digital basis. Now, when we talked to the publishers, what we asked them was what are their priorities in terms of ebook production. And what's interesting is that what you're seeing is both with print as well as ebooks, what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to improve the overall experience. And that's a near-term priority for ebooks. In some cases, that may mean making ebooks available in formats or across more mobile platforms. Other user experience improvements could include improving the layout, design, or the typography of ebooks, as well as embedding things like rich media, and that's audio, video, and interactive graphics. And those were reported as near-term priorities for the book publisher respondents. And so those are things that everybody's looking at as they look at not just print, where we're seeing some of those technologies embedded in print, but clearly making that ebook experience much richer. When publishers were asked which activities of their business they focused on, basically what they said is that they looked at things like publishing standards, new print and media trends, publishing business models, and content monetization. The biggest challenge that, quite honestly, they have is, though, building out that advertising and sales strategy. And you'll hear Reagan talk a little bit about what Thompson Shore does to assist some of those customers. And what they basically told us was that as I look at the market, especially today, what I'm really looking at, if I'm a publisher, is the ability to reduce risk. I want more flexibility. I've got to have help in terms of reducing my cycle time. I've got to have specialty books and the ability to deliver custom content. I want marketing support. I want the integration of interactive components. And so when we look across the book market, what we're seeing is it's a huge opportunity for both ebooks as well as digital print. It's clearly a market that's moving toward very short runs, especially with all the title proliferation. We're seeing it's a market that has higher page value through things like color, customization, and finishing. We're seeing a lot of new business models, self-publishing, personalization, and customization. And finally, we're seeing a very, very heavy emphasis on the supply chain, print on demand, test marketing, and extending the backlist. And so what you've got to look at is how do I deal with that end-to-end integration given the needs of the publishing market. Now, with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to Peter, and Peter's going to talk to you about what's going on in the university press market. And so with that, take it away, Peter.
Great. Thanks very much, Barb. I'll start, I guess, just by telling everybody a little bit about who the AAUP is and what our members do. The Association of American University Presses was founded in 1937, so we celebrated our 75th anniversary last year. We have 130 members who are engaged in all aspects of scholarly publishing, and I'll talk about what that means in just a second. We think that we have probably about 80% of the country's university presses are AAUP members. So it includes obvious places like Yale University Press, Harvard University Press, the University of California Press, but we also have some affiliated scholarly publishers, museums like the Getty or MoMA, and think tanks like Rand Corporation or the Brookings Institution. And I think that what's probably useful to keep in mind is that the two things that distinguish university presses or scholarly publishing from most other types of commercial publishing activities is that, number one, our publishing programs are all mission-based, which is to say that their main purpose is to disseminate scholarship, and for most, if not all, university presses, while profitability would be nice, the majority of my members exist with a subvention from their host institution. And then I think the second key differentiator is that scholarly content is highly vetted content. It's usually peer-reviewed and or authored, refereed. So there's a high degree of vetting that occurs before anything that my members publish actually goes to what used to be called the press. There's a large range of sizes for university presses. We have a number of our members only publish a few dozen titles a year, and then we have a couple who are producing well over 1,000 titles a year. It's also important to keep in mind that there's a wide array in the publishing mix for university presses. Virtually all university presses, of course, produce scholarly monographs, generally in the trade area or the reference area. Sometimes they may have an art book publishing program. About half of university presses publish at least a journal, although journals in significant numbers are probably only published by about a dozen presses. Then we have somewhere between a half a dozen and a dozen university presses who are involved in textbook publishing programs, either for the elementary, high school, or university level. Excuse me, sorry. I think important for our program today, like most associations, AAUP has a partner program, and we have about a dozen partners. These are folks who are service providers to our university press members, and in fact, it's a happy coincidence, and it's both of those things, that Thompson Shore is one of AAUP's partner program participants. And so, for example, a couple of the university presses that Thompson Shore provide services for are Beacon Press and the University of California Press. To talk just a little bit more specifically about how the digital juggernaut is impacting the university press publishing community, I thought I'd just share some stats. We survey our members annually on a number of their publishing activities, and we do get a statistically valid sample of our membership. So this is a good representation, at least, of how digital is impacting the scholarly publishing community. And at this point, fully 90% of our members are doing backlist print on demand, and 70% are doing frontlist print on demand. Another widely adopted digital publishing strategy is retail ebooks, obviously generally through either Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but also through library aggregators like EBSCO. So that would account for about 76% of our members' activities. It's probably also interesting to just comment on some of the more anecdotal things that our university presses are doing in the digital publishing area. A few of our members are experimenting with a wide variety of platforms. We think that at last count, there were at least 45 different platforms being tested, that includes, believe it or not, 13 plus different digital formats. So, for example, only a small minority of our press members have their front lists in XML. So we're still very early on in the digital learning curve. A quarter of our members have tried digital shorts, which is content that's not really book length. It might be more akin to sort of a journal article or a magazine article, and it's content that's generally adapted from a longer monographic work, but it is specifically structured and designed to be presented to a digital audience. A third of our members have tried open access for their books in some format or another. And a third have even developed proprietary book-based apps. Some of our guys are even experimenting with ebook rentals and online courses. So you can see that we're still early on in the learning curve, but we're trying a wide variety of different approaches to digital publishing. The one last important thing I'd mention is that we're actually doing this by and large without adding existing staff. So, for example, less than a third of university presses have a designated e-publishing manager. So one of the things that I think that will be very useful when we move over to Reagan's part of the presentation, one of the biggest challenges that university presses face is that they're trying to do all of this without, frankly, adding additional staff or additional headcount. And that's where folks like Thompson Shore can be really, really useful. Barb, were you going to ask the question or interject?
I just wanted a perspective. I've got some questions coming in. One of the ones that was asked is they said, you know, could the panel comment on, there's a recent Wall Street Journal article which is titled Don't Burn Your Books Yet. And it indicated that many electronic reader devices are out there, the popularity is slowing down significantly. What's your view on that, I guess? When you look at the books that people are distributing, do you find a heavy emphasis continuing on the ebook side of it?
I think that that's the type of question where the answer is going to vary widely by segment. I think, for example, some of our members who have strong trade publication programs, they've already seen pretty substantial ebook penetration, and things very well may begin to trail off in the out years. I think if you go to a very different segment, textbook publishing, As we talked about when we were preparing for this seminar, by and large, the textbook publishing market really hasn't figured out exactly how E is going to work, and for whatever combination of reasons, university and graduate students really are still preferring, by overwhelming numbers at the moment, print books to e-books. So I think that probably it's good advice, but it is also advice that's going to vary by segment.
Yeah, just an aside, Scholastic published research, and they actually looked at and surveyed college students, and I want to say they went out to 2,000 college students, and the college students highlighted the fact that they preferred a hardcover book, paper book, and the logic behind it was, quite honestly, what we all did in college, which was highlighting key concepts while we were taking or participating in lectures. So just a thought starter there, but that's one of the things, and it was a recent piece of research that they did in the last year.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen anecdotal evidence that bears that out as well. There was one of our press directors was just telling me yesterday that a graduate course at the University of North Carolina, the students had the option of either getting the ebook for free or spending, you know, $29.95 for the print book, and 20 out of 20 went for print.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Great, thanks.
And actually, you know, just to dovetail off of that, the next thing that I wanted to highlight was just to sort of point out just how digital revenue is growing for university presses. In 2011, it was 3.1% of total revenues, and in 2012, it was 5.2% of total revenues. Now, that's actually a big jump in 1 year to go from 3.1% to 5.2% of your revenues. But just as we were alluding to, I think it's really important to take that a statistic like that with a couple of grains of salt. One is the adoption of digital publishing strategies is going to vary widely with the size of the organization. Some university presses are very small and just struggling to get scale. And then more importantly than that, even as we were saying, I think, is the publishing mix. You know, publishers with strong trade programs have substantial ebook revenue, some getting up as high as 30%. But if you're a journals publisher, you're almost fully electronic. But if you're in textbook publishing or art book publishing, you're going to be substantially below the kinds of figures I was just suggesting. So the last sort of thoughts that I would leave folks with are For our members who are not already publishing ebooks, they do know that they need to figure out a way to integrate that into their strategies and into their workflows. The second point, and I think we touched briefly on this already too, is that the technology really doesn't have to be a threat. It can be an opportunity. And just one really elegant example of that I'll share, and I'm highlighting the University of North Carolina again just because I think that it's such a wonderful thing that they've done here, is they have a book series called The Long Civil Rights March, and it is a history of the civil rights movement that includes included no small numbers of, as part of the scholarly research that went into it, no small number of interviews. And so part of the overall compendium is a compilation of oral histories. And obviously, if you buy the book, all you get is the researcher's sort of redactions and summarizations and just maybe a few call-out quotations of the information that was assembled during the collection of the oral histories. But if you buy the electronic product, you actually can click on a link and listen to the interviews and to the oral histories and listen to the people who participated in the various civil rights marches speak in their own voices. And what's so powerful about that is it's not leaders speaking, it's just everyday people who were participating in the movement speaking. And so it just adds such a rich dimension to the series that, frankly, print can't give you. So it's not always a threat. Sometimes it can be an opportunity. And then I guess the third thought that I'd leave you is that, not all books are created equal. As we said, we really don't know how ebooks are going to play out in the textbook market, and it's also unclear what the path to E is for some niche markets like art books. If you've just gone and seen an exhibit at MoMA or at the Art Institute of Chicago and it really touched you, you want the coffee table book. You don't necessarily want the E alternative to that.
Yeah. Now I have a couple just quick questions before I turn it over to Reagan for you that came in. And you may or may not know the answers to these, so I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to, Peter. One of the questions that came in is, on the college bookstore market, how do you see the future of college bookstores, for instance, renting out ebooks? And this is from a scholarly publisher. And they wanted to understand what your perspective was on that.
Ooh, that's sort of a how are we going to fly question when we haven't actually figured out how to walk yet. But it is a really good question, because I can tell you that at least some commercial textbook publishers view ebooks as the solution to their competition with the used book market. So baked into that that statement is the assumption that there would be no ebook rentals available for textbooks. I think that scholarly publishers may have a different take on that. Since the penetration, though, of E into the textbook market, though, is so minimal at this point, I think it's still kind of a hypothetical debate.
Okay. One other just quick question, and this is something that I really don't know the answer to, and you may or may not, and then we'll ask Reagan if you don't know the answer on it. But you mentioned that you serve some of the, K through 12 market also in terms of scholarly materials and textbooks. And one of the questions that came in is, how do you address the issue of working with developers in the K-12 market on things like font licensing? And if you don't know the answer to this, it's all right. I'll ask Reagan the same question. She can think about it for a minute. But there's end-user license agreements that are used for digital products, and they have different font licenses from the print side. Do you have any comments on that, or do you know anything about that? And if you don't, I'm going to ask Reagan that question because I'm sure she does.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I would be more comfortable deferring that one to Reagan.
Okay, we'll defer that to Reagan. With that, what I am going to do is I am going to turn the presentation over to Reagan Parker. And Reagan is responsible for business development at Thompson Shore. And so I'm going to turn over to Reagan and let her tell you a little bit about Thompson Shore, and we can maybe ask her a couple of these questions that neither Peter and I knew the answers to. Reagan,
okay,
take it away.
Yeah, absolutely. So as Barb mentioned, my name is Reagan Parker, and I'm the Business Development Director at Thompson Shore, and we're located in Dexter, Michigan. We're a full-service book manufacturing and logistics company, and we've been in business just over 40 years now. And as Barb mentioned earlier, print books are still 76% of the format that books are going out in. So I really kind of wanted to focus today on how we can more effectively implement a successful print program using digital printing. And so I'm going to just kind of go from there. Barb, do you want me to talk about that answer now, or do you want me to kind of wait and we'll readdress it later?
Well, we can come back and readdress
okay.
it.
Great. Just wanted to check. So I wanted to start off talking a little bit about some of the issues that our publishing customers tell us that they're facing on a daily basis. And as we know, the publishing industry is changing daily, both the different types of issues we're facing and the tools that we have available to help us with those. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about what we've done to help some of our customers overcome those. I think any company that has a backlist understands the first one, which is obsolescence. And how do we keep our material relevant, and how do we keep it in the marketplace and in front of our consumers? A second one, time to market, is possibly one of the most critical issues our publishing friends tell us they're facing right now, because access to information is as easy as picking up your iPhone, and the emergence of substitute products like television and video games has really created a huge dip in our market. It is absolutely critical that we're able to create buzz quickly and effectively and capitalize quickly on that buzz, because any perceived delay reduces interest and marketability of our products. So, and this leads right into the problems that we face, or that our publishers tell us they're facing with lead times from Asia. We all know there can be significant price breaks when partnering with vendors out of Asia, but at the expense of what? We can kill the marketability of our product in a few short days if we're unable to meet market demand when they want it and where they want it. Because marketability is so important, being able to produce a variety of test materials and targeted marketing initiatives quickly, while also being able to test concepts on the fly to adapt to market changes, is absolutely crucial to keeping the buzz going and projecting the future success of our projects. We can no longer speak at the masses. We have to connect with the individuals. And being able to create regional and demographic individualized content to test our market is vital to us understanding where our profits will come from. We all know that inventory management concepts are changing. No longer are our hands tied by the hub-and-spoke distribution mentality, but understanding the new concepts of micro-inventory and just-in-time inventory are new to our industry, and understanding how to find a partner who can really help us best capitalize on those opportunities can be both time-consuming and costly if we make a mistake. And then lastly is cash flow. We all feel it. Our margins are getting tighter, costs are rising, and our authors and our consumers alike are demanding. And we often find ourselves in a crunch, trying to find creative ways to launch our big project without busting our bank account. But there are solutions to these critical issues. So by marrying traditional offset print production with a robust digital platform, publishers can meet market demands on the fly and produce product that connects to the individual in a timely manner, resulting in increased sales and brand loyalty. Let's talk a little about the options that open up to us when we incorporate a digital platform into our traditional print efforts. First, let's look at print on demand, or POD as it's often referred to. POD is a business model, short and simple, that allows us to print to order, removes the need for warehousing, and mitigates inventory and returns risks, which can be costly and time consuming. POD, quite simply, is the optimization of our supply chain. It's reversing the transaction flow so that your consumer is driving the production process, not you. Product is produced and shipped direct to customers after orders for that product are placed. We only print what you want, when you want it, and in the exact quantity you need. This allows for innovation in packaging and shipping, including the ability to ship marketing materials and books in the same box, to either retailers or even directly to your end consumer, which creates another opportunity for direct-to-consumer connection after the product has already been purchased. What if you could be selling your next product direct to your customer as they're opening the product they've already purchased from you? And more importantly, what if those marketing materials included in that box could be customized to that specific consumer? Using POD, you reduce your need for inventory because you're producing product just in time. This will reduce warehousing costs, risks associated with too much or too little inventory, and significantly cuts back on your returns, which are a headache for everybody. And again, what possibilities might exist if your product could be customized to fit the person ordering it? With a true robust program in place, true one-off versioning is a simple reality, connecting to the individual through your product.
Hey, Reagan, I do have a quick question for you. One of the things that came through here is a question on distribution. Do you, when you do any of the books that you're dealing with, do you work with Amazon or Barnes & Noble to get books into the supply chain so somebody can order them from Amazon, but you're the fulfillment agent?
Yep, we do that. Yep, absolutely. So customers can come through the Amazon website. They can order a product. That order actually comes directly to us in real time. We fulfill it. We print the book right then, fulfill the order. We can package it with marketing materials or other products and ship it direct to the end consumer. So.
Now, can I just a quick question? Somebody wanted to know as they looked at your business model. So if I'm dealing with Amazon, mm-hmm. is there a cost associated with putting the book on Amazon? My assumption is that there is.
Yes. So there's a couple of different costs in place. There's going to be a commission that Amazon is going to obviously take for using their site.
Yeah.
And then Thompson Shore is going to take a commission as well, a sales commission as well. And then there's packaging and handling fees, the production cost of the book. That's usually kind of all that it encompasses. But
okay.
Depending on the program that's in place and what we're doing for the customer, that's kind of a
And then the procedure would be that on behalf of your client, if your client wanted the book placed on Amazon, you would do that for them.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So another great advantage to digital printing is what we often refer to as short-run digital. It's very similar to offset in that the concept is typically publisher-driven, although it can be retail and wholesale-driven. And it will provide a small inventory of product that can be distributed in a manner that best suits your business needs. Short-run digital is great for publishers who are considering a micro-inventory or inventory replenishment fulfillment model, which allows for your wholesale and retail partners to order larger quantities to be distributed to their customers. Short-run digital is another tool to test the market, great for regional or demographic-specific market testing. Because one book can be produced using variable data in larger quantities, you're able to produce the same product in several different variations and ship it to several different regions to test how the market reacts. This can be really invaluable when testing sensitive materials or complex concepts on different market segments. Short-run digital is also excellent for large inventory gap management because it's smaller quantities produced faster. It allows for publishers to replenish inventory that is quickly depleting while waiting on larger offset runs to complete. Oh, sorry. I'm going to back up. This can help manage your two-market schedule as well, as it can provide early market release while buzz builds for your longer run and assures that there is always supply to meet your demand. And then lastly, short-run digital can be an effective cash flow tool, as it often requires less financially to get started. Because you avoid lofty plate making and setup charges, typically associated with offset print, you're able to ensure your title hits bookshelves even when cash is tight. The last kind of big solution I want to talk to in terms of digital print is web to print, which is the 100% automation of the supply chain. Completely publisher-driven, web-to-print allows you to upload files and place orders 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, without any hassle. It is literally the virtual fulfillment of the print production process. This tool allows you to manage your assets, place new orders, place reprint orders, make changes to files or orders, and review your project status any day, time, day or night. It creates an ease of doing business and allows you to have greater control over your project end-to-end. So some of the benefits that we see coming out of the use of a robust digital program is that, first, you maintain a much better handle on your two-market strategy. Because digital has advanced so quickly, you're able to produce offset, short-run digital, and on-demand with very little quality discrepancy. This allows for greater issue management because you can find solutions clear across the platform without worrying about the quality of your product. You're able to produce your publications in exact quantities when, where, and how they're needed right now. This helps reduce irrelevancy in content, get your content into the hands of your consumer faster, and then keeps it there longer. And then using digital as part of your two-market strategy will significantly reduce the time it takes to get your product into the hands of your readers and market influencers, which ultimately is what you need to create that initial buzz to support your longer print production strategy. As we've mentioned, I'm sorry. Yeah,
I got just a real quick question, Reagan. You mm-hmm. talk about the quality of the print. the question I've got is are you doing black and white and color, and what technologies are you using?
Yep, we are. We're doing both black and white and color, and we are using HP and Ose presses. So,
okay, terrific.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. As we've mentioned, one of the greatest benefits of understanding and using digital appropriately is that it reduces inventory costs and keeps your product accessible longer, really in theory forever. It provides you, the publisher, greater control and a way to manage your publications so they are always relevant, up-to-date, and accurate, no matter how quickly the market or the information is changing. So another great benefit to digital is a streamlined supply chain. As I've mentioned, you're able to get exactly what you want when you want it. It's going to reduce guessing, it's going to create more control for you, the publisher, and it's going to mitigate risk to you. You're able to produce real-time publications that remain relevant and connect with your audience on the individual level. You're able to maintain greater control over your projects, no more shooting from the hip or making grand projections. And you have the control to manage your project, even if that project changes daily. It provides an easy-to-use avenue for coordinating efforts across channels. You can send variations of any product along with direct-to-consumer marketing efforts through any channel available and rely on the knowledge that your consumer is getting the exact message you wanted them to get. It can also reduce sourcing as it creates a streamlined program from pre-press through final distribution. There's no more need for managing multiple partners on a single project. And then lastly, it allows you to test various marketing concepts without a lot of hassle because all of your efforts can be coordinated into one system at one location with one contact. In an industry and a market that is as diverse as ours and changes as rapidly as ours, it's important that you're able to target the specifics. By breaking longer runs into shorter, more targeted runs, you can speak to your consumer directly. Using one-off variable data publications, targeting regional or demographic, using targeted regional or demographic publications, or even co-branding with other companies or organizations. With the restrictions of traditional print, your only limitation is your imagination. And when you couple other industry innovations, such as the developments in e-books, mobile applications, QR codes, 3D printing, and augmented reality, along with other advances, the possibilities for connecting with your audience are really endless. It's just a matter of identifying your market, the best ways to connect with that market and those individuals, and then looking at the best ways to package and deliver your content to them.
Reagan, I got a couple more quick questions for you. I'm going to insert
yep.
them while you're talking here.
Right.
The first question is, you're obviously, given this slide, producing some one-off copies
mm-hmm.
or one-off prints. How do you make that affordable? Isn't it costly? And what software tools are you using?
So we make it affordable because when we're pricing the units up front, you're really removing a lot of the kind of setup and plate making and the kind of heavy lifting that is at the front of any offset job. Your per unit price on offset work, I mean, it is economies of scale still. The more units you're producing at once, the less per unit you're going to pay, for sure. It is going to be more costly per unit to do it this way. However, you are avoiding all of that upfront cash outlay. And so you're able to retain more of your money longer in your own pocket. We are using various software and hardware technologies in our company to both automate processes to help take out cost and then pass some of that on to our customer. So I don't want to speak too specifically to the different
it's a lot of that custom
using,
is a lot of that custom developed.
Yeah, we do have. We have a couple of programmers in-house who have really custom developed a lot of the processes that we're using. We have partnered with a couple of companies as well who have come in and helped us build things out also. So,
I do have a couple more questions on the e-book side of it. Is there a specific software tool that you're using for e-book conversions, or is that custom developed as well?
Nope. Right now we're actually partnering primarily with a group called Easy Press. We haven't we've used a couple of other companies as well, but we really are working pretty closely with Easy Press right now, and they are working with our developers as well to set up some things in-house where we will actually be – we are currently converting simpler things in-house, and then we're working towards the development of being able to convert more complicated layouts in-house
and,
as well. So.
And then what specifically – if I were a publisher asking you to create an e-book for me, what specifically do you need from the publisher?
Mm-hmm. The big things are we like to have right now a PDF file, but we can take application files as well. And then just almost much like a print book, the specs for the book and where they are going to be distributing it and what the goals of the project are so that we can make sure that we're applying the most appropriate concepts, I guess, to the conversion.
And then one other quick question, and then I'll let you continue here. But when you look at the ebook side and we ask you the question about Amazon, do you prep the book for both print and ebook distribution and forward it to Amazon?
If the customer asks us to. That is not something that we do automatically, but we do have the ability to distribute both to the physical book to Amazon and the ebook to Amazon Kindle. So if that's what the customer wants us to do, then yes, we can
process,
prep it for both.
Is the process roughly the same, which is what you do is you know, Amazon would distribute – how do you deal with the distribution side of that or mm-hmm. the financial side of that then?
Yep, so it looks a little bit different, but not a lot. The biggest difference between the ebook and what we refer to as the P-book is that on the ebook side, they are actually downloading that directly from Amazon. So that order, per se, is not coming to us. They are not downloading that product from our server.
Okay.
But the transactions are still coming through us. So we are still receiving the money from Amazon. We are still handling all of the sales, reporting back to the customer, and we are still kind of in the mix of that transaction flow,
okay.
kind of managing the administrative side of it for them.
Okay.
And then on the physical book side, we actually are receiving the order and fulfilling the product. So
great. Thanks, Reagan. I'll let you keep going here.
Yeah, absolutely. The last benefit I want to talk a little bit about is automated distribution. On-demand product fulfillment and targeted distribution of content and a focused marketing message can all be streamlined into one simple solution, which will eliminate inventory risk and mitigate your returns risk. This means time and money is going to be saved across the board. So really the big benefits are that you're going to save money, you're going to save time, you're going to reduce waste, you're going to have more tools to prove marketing ROI, you're going to reduce your inventory and storage costs and risks, and you're going to eliminate obsolescence. So our industry and our world is changing rapidly, as we've mentioned, and we must refocus our efforts from time to print to time to market, from cost per page to total unit cost, from just in case to just in time, to reaching the masses, to really capturing the individual, to thinking about print volume, to thinking about what is our print value, from being customer reactive to being customer proactive, to sourcing print, to really sourcing solutions for our problems, and then from the cost of the print job to the programmatic results of the whole program as opposed to just the print. So just to throw in the shameless plug, Thompson Shore can help with any of your print production and content logistics needs. We offer an array of services, and because we have a robust, flexible printing and distribution platform, we're able to customize solutions to help you achieve your most difficult project goals. As Barb mentioned earlier, I mean, we have everything from the traditional offset and digital book manufacturing, retail-driven print-on-demand. We can help with kind of pre-press consulting and typesetting and layout, clear through distribution and fulfillment, and title sales and marketing. And our title sales and marketing is also something that we are really proud of. We actually partner with a really great firm called Smith Publicity. They're really well known in the industry. Some of you maybe have heard of them or worked with them, and they put together really remarkable PR packages for our customers and marketing packages for our customers. So really we do a myriad of things. We have a really flexible, really robust platform, and we're always willing to listen to what's causing the biggest problems for you and working to help solve those the best way we can.
Well, now, Reagan, I got a few questions for you that have come in. First of all, I'm going to ask you to address the issue that I started on the fonts, which is how do you deal with the end-user license agreement issues on digital products versus the print side? And so if you could share your perspective on that, I'd appreciate it.
So I just want to make sure I understand the question fully. So you're asking kind of digital rights management on...
Well, the way that the question came in, and by the way, I'll take any clarification from the submitter, is how do you address the issue working with developers in the K-12 market related to font licensing for digital use? And then it says most end-user license agreements that are used for digital products have different font licenses from the print side.
Okay. I see what they're saying. So I think they're saying, like, you end up having to buy two licenses. You have to buy one. Yeah. So I don't actually head up our ebook division, so I don't know a ton about kind of the font licensing side of it. But what I could do is, if you were willing to maybe pass on information, I could answer that question as soon as we get off the phone. I could type up an email, send it to you, Barb, and you could pass it on.
That would be great. We'll get back to you then on that one, because I don't have an answer on that either. Now, Reagan, one other question, which is, do you charge a fee for ebook conversion, or is there? And then, what about royalty payments to the publishers and the authors?
Okay, so we do charge a fee for ebook conversion. It's usually based on complexity of the project and kind of page count, and, you know, color versus black and white, and are we doing fixed layout versus a a reflow format, and so. We take all those things into consideration, and we provide a quote, much like we do for any traditional print. So yes, the answer is yes.
Okay.
And then, I'm sorry, what was the second part of the question?
I think you touched on, I think you covered it.
Great.
Let me ask a question, and I'm going to turn this to both Peter and to Reagan. And they asked, what's the panel's view on the ownership or lack of issue with ebooks? And so I'll ask Peter, what do you see as the ownership process with ebooks and the sharing of ebooks and those kinds of things? I'd like a perspective, I guess, from the university press market.
Yeah, well, I guess I did sort of touch on this before, although in reflecting on it, I'm not sure quite how clear I was at the time. I think it, you know, in some respects, it's either a question of the legal technicalities as things exist now, or a philosophical question about what's the right approach. And, you know, legally, an electronic book is an electronic product, and you accept a license in the terms of service, and if that license and those terms of service do not restrict your ability to redistribute the content, you've accepted that when you've acquired the electronic product. Now, you know, my hunch is that anybody who's asking that question isn't asking what the rules are, but asking whether that's the right way to go about the matter. And there's going to be a wide variety of opinion. Obviously, for-profit publishers are going to want much tighter control over their electronic rights, and I think that for understandable reasons, if you look at the music industry, and I think that when I alluded to the fact that textbook publishers understand that electronic textbooks give them an opportunity to level the playing field with the used textbook market, that's one really good example of why a for-profit textbook publisher would want to see the current model maintained. On the other hand, many of my members who are mission-based publishers and whose primary obligation is the dissemination of scholarship would probably be looking for some way to adapt the sort of gold open access model to the distribution or redistribution of ebooks. Once the publishers recovered their costs, then, and especially as in the case with other open access publishing, if there's been some sort of outside funding mechanism for the research that's led to the ebook, then in that case, people might want to be looking for a much less restrictive approach to distribution. So the answer to the question is, you know, the current state's pretty well known, and there's going to be a wide range of opinions on whether the current state is the desirable end state or not.
Okay. Any comments from your perspective on that, Reagan?
No, I would actually just really agree with Peter. I think it's really market segment based. I think everybody has their goals in mind for what they want their content to accomplish. And so I think the important thing is having really strict terms of use in place and understanding that anytime you put something out there electronically, it's going to be much more difficult to manage. So.
And I'm going to go through, I've got one last question, and I'm going to direct this to you, Reagan. But for e-books, how many publishers use digital rights management, which is on a per-book basis fairly expensive? Mm-hmm. And could you make a comment on that?
I'm sorry, I needed to ask the question one more time. I'm not sure I understand
sure.
What's asking.
The question was, for e-books, many publishers use digital rights management,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is very expensive per book.
Yeah.
And they said, the question was, how many publishers use digital rights management, mm-hmm. which is very expensive per book, especially when you're looking at e-books?
Yep. Okay, so actually, out of our customer base that's doing it, I would say that there's probably maybe 20% of them are using digital rights management. I mean, because it is so cost prohibitive, that is the biggest issue, and because it's still not a guarantee. I mean, even using the digital rights management tool, it really isn't a guarantee that your information is not going to get disseminated outside of your control. And so I think because of the cost coupled with the fact that it isn't a great control anyway, we really don't see very many people using it. We do get a lot of questions about it, though.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to put people in touch with our e-book experts who could speak to it more clearly if they were interested.
Yeah. And yep. And one last quick comment, and I'm going to make a comment on it, which is we got a question about, have you discussed enhanced e-books such as iPad app titles and video, image, text, and audio? I'm going to make a quick comment on that. We see a lot of emphasis as we look at e-books on integration with interactive components. We're also seeing that, by the way, in traditional textbooks where people are embedding augmented reality so that if I'm a child, I can point at a book with a cell phone and the image on the page will pop to life. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask both of you to make a quick comment on that. Where do you see e-books and interactivity, Peter, in terms of the future of the market?
I think it's got to be critical and it's got to be central to it. If you think about the example that I gave earlier, the University of North Carolina Press's long civil rights march series and the things that they were able to do, that's really just the tip of the iceberg. I think, you know, once we've learned to walk and gotten comfortable with publishing our content electronically, we're really going to start to discover all of the really great things that technology can do for us to enhance our customers' experience with that technology. And it's going to include all sorts of the interactive things that are obvious to us and some things that down the road we're not really considering it at the moment. But I think that the shorter answer is it's got to be central to it. I mean, at some point people are going to say, your content's available electronically. Why aren't you doing more with it?
Yeah. And Reagan, how do you see that working for Thompson Shore?
Yeah. See, I think it's a very exciting time for publishing. I think it's the convergence of kind of old traditional and new innovation. I think old literary classics with a digital interactive user experience that really engaged children to read would be very cool. I think it's going to be the direction of e-books for children's books specifically. It positions the publisher for a larger marketplace, in my opinion, not only selling to kind of parents and aunts and uncles, but also to libraries and educators. And I think it's an exciting time. I don't think it's something that Thompson Shore is shying away from at all. Even as a traditional print house, I think it's something that we are investigating closely every day and jumping into with both feet. So,
good. Well, I'm going to wrap up with just a couple final thoughts, and if we didn't get to your question, we will absolutely get back to you. But I think the message that you heard is that technology is available to drive profit. And it's going to drive profit for publishers. It's going to help you manage the complex array of issues and systems for content management and distribution. It's going to help you get rid of physical inventory. It's going to provide better physical logistics and warehouse services, and it's going to integrate with distribution partners that will give you time-to-market efficiencies, as well as, by the way, global reach. I think if you're a book manufacturer, what you're seeing is technology is out there that will help you capture a broader base of customers, especially a lot of the small publishers that didn't have access to some of the technologies. That's going to provide print capabilities that will yield faster speeds, quality, a wider range of substrates. It's going to support integration into distribution channels, as well as, by the way, what we just talked about, which is the integration of electronic and mobile services, so that if I'm a printer or a manufacturer like Thompson Shore, I'm going to have a lot more opportunity to open up the breadth of the services I provide. And I think the big message is that it's going to create new opportunities for the publishing market, new titles that can be introduced, new channels and new formats. It's going to reduce risk. It's going to encourage new business models, and ultimately, it's going to drive profit for everyone. I would like to thank everybody for their time and attention today. If you have a few questions that we didn't get to, we will respond. I'll pull them off the site, and we'll make sure that we do get back to you. And I want to extend my sincere thanks to both Peter and Reagan. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.